live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. This is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We've got a tremendous show lined up for you today. Coming up in the third hour, we tried to effort him yesterday. Was not available, but we got him locked up today, making time on his vacation for us. It's the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast, the one and only Andrew Juge. Will be breaking down all things Saints and some Pels for us in the third and final hour. We'll also be talking to Sheldon Mickles from the Baton Rouge Advocate, giving us updates on LSU basketball. They scored a recruit yesterday. He's also going to give us his thoughts on the story that he wrote about Tremont Waters and Naz Reid, looking like they're possibly going to be selected in the second round of Thursday night's NBA draft. And then to start off hour number two at 7:02, the St. Thomas More legend himself, Danny Broussard, who got to be part of something quite interesting, part of, I guess you could say, a recruitment video of sorts made to land Zion Williams to make him feel more at home. The former Duke star is expected to go number one overall, of course, and be selected by the New Orleans Pelicans tomorrow night. Plus, we'll get to much, much more Astros, Saints, and everything in between. But let's start off the day talking about the news that broke yesterday. We talked a little bit about it on yesterday's show because Mickey Loomis had made some initial comments on Mad Dog Radio when asked about the contract situation with Michael Thomas, the star wide receiver at Ohio State, a second-round draft pick by the Saints a few years ago, who's rewrote the record books in his first 3 years in the league. Well, apparently, they are on the verge of a monster contract. Apparently, multiple media reports are coming out saying that it looks like they're going to try to get a deal done before the start of training camp, even if not during training camp, and that the Saints are okay making Michael Thomas the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League. That's right. Multiple media reports out of New Orleans as well as national are reporting on this, that the deal could even be done before training camp begins in late July. Thomas would surpass the salary of former Isadore Newman product and LSU star Odell Beckham Jr. Beckham right now makes an average of $18 million per year. Thomas was drafted in the second round back in 2016 out of Ohio State. He's currently going to enter the final year of his rookie contract. And he's coming off a career year where he caught a franchise record 125 passes for 1,405 yards. Once again, we talked about this on yesterday's show that Mickey Loomis said on Sirius Radio back on Monday that conversations had been begun regarding Thomas's contract. In his three-year career, the man known as Can't Guard Mike, the man who paid homage to the great Joe Horn last season, the man who's fully embraced New Orleans culture, he had the specially designed Master P cleats, okay? He's fully embraced the culture down there. The team has embraced him. The fan base has embraced him. This is what he's done in just three seasons in the NFL, being a second-round pick out of Ohio State. 321 receptions for 3,787 yards and scored 23 touchdowns. I talked about it the other day, that if you're the Saints, this makes all the sense in the world to get Thomas paid now. We made it a poll question a couple weeks ago. Overwhelmingly, you, the listener, diehard members of the Who Dat Nation, agreed to get Thomas locked up. It also makes sense to do this. Look, they already wrapped up Cam Jordan, gave him his extension, $42 million guaranteed in that contract. He'll more than likely retire as a Saint. He's the heart and soul of your defense. But if you're looking forward and you want this team to be competitive and continue being a playoff team and not go into the doldrums once a certain number nine retires, which will happen, you have to make sure you have those foundation pieces that you've been drafting over the last 3 to 4 years are in place. They're not going to go anywhere. Thomas was on top of that list because he was entering the final year of his rookie contract. Up next is going to be Alvin Kamara. And then Marshawn Lattimore. Because once Drew Brees retires, there's going to be an absolute monstrous dead money cap hit for the Saints to have to deal with. And if they already have these guys under contract, it's going to be easier. They're just going to have to take the hit, and they're like, okay, boom, we're going to take the hit. But yet, we still got Michael Thomas locked up. We got Alvin Kamara locked up. We got Marshawn Lattimore locked up. Thomas was the most important piece, obviously. He's a top three wide receiver in the league. And Loomis and Jeff Ireland and the rest of the New Orleans Saints brain trust has made the decision wisely that they're going to take care of their people, with the exception of Mark Ingram. But they're taking care of everyone moving forward, it seems that way. Took care of Cam Jordan, going to knock him out. Michael Thomas, they're going to work on that deal, going to take care of that. And not only in the addition of Alvin Kamara, who they're going to have to pay, because the guy's a two-time Pro Bowler already, and you got him on a fourth-round contract, so you got him dirt cheap, and you got the extra year, too, is Ryan Ramczyk's going to get paid, too. That's going to be coming up in a couple years, too. So you got these foundational young pieces, these great draft picks that Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland have been able to secure and put all these great young pieces around their aging quarterback. Once your aging quarterback retires and walks off into the sunset, hopefully a Super Bowl champion, you want to still be competitive and you want to still have all these great pieces in place. That way you could possibly try to go out and get yourself either draft you a quarterback or get you a veteran quarterback to come in and continue the run going along. Locking up Michael Thomas is a step in the right direction. Now, we don't know how much the contract's going to be. Some reports say it could be $20 million a year. $20 million a year for a wide receiver. That's a lot. Cody Schutz, you're a diehard New Orleans Saints fan. You okay paying $20 million a year for a wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean that's the lay of the land now. It's the way the NFL works. Either get with it or get left behind, type of thing. Somebody will pay him $20 million if it's not you. So Michael Thomas is obviously elite. He's that guy. I think that it doesn't matter really what the dollar sign is. You got to pay him.
Yeah, you got to lock it up.
If he wants like Goldfinger money, you still got to pay him. It really doesn't matter.
And you're exactly correct, because it's one of those situations where you can't really afford to let Michael Thomas walk for over like an additional $2 million, right? You know, let's say the Saints are saying, you know, it would be great if we could keep it at 18.5. And Michael Thomas's people is like, nah, you need to go ahead and make that an even 20, my man. Are you really going to balk over another $1.5 million per year when the going rate, and we know that the salaries are going to continue to increase year in, year out? I mean, you have a very good possibility even making Michael Thomas the highest paid wide receiver right now, Cody. In 3 years, he could already be outplaying that contract because the way the NFL salary cap is going to continue to increase year in and year out. And then someone else is going to step up and throw stupid money at someone. Locking him up now before training camp, and that's the other thing that I like about this. They take care of Cam Jordan. Now they're going to take care of Michael Thomas. It's also a shrewd move by the Saints front office because they got some pushback from their players over the Mark Ingram situation. And you know who was the most upset about the Mark Ingram situation? I'll give you the top three guys that were most vocally upset about the team not paying Mark what he wanted to retain his services. Number one, Cam Jordan. Number two, Michael Thomas. Number three, Alvin Kamara. They already gave one a big contract. They're working on the second one, giving them a big contract too. And they'll take care of Kamara probably next year. So this is also, you know, you let the dust settle, let the feelings kind of start, you know, healing over about, you know, Mark leaving to take more money for the Baltimore Ravens. And then you make sure that you take care of the guys who were the most vocally upset with you letting Mark Ingram walk. I don't think that's a coincidence whatsoever. It's a very shrewd business move, and that's what you expect from the man who's running your organization and Mickey Loomis, and then also with Jeff Ireland. And you got to give it up to Mickey. He's found a way, in particularly in the Sean Payton era, to find money. Like, that guy is a sorcerer of some kind because he just always finds money to be able to make these deals work. Now, he structures them some ways to make them more back-end deals, and then he, you know, what he's done with Drew is have him kind of renegotiate that deal and work it that way. That's it. Guy's a sorcerer. And they've, what's allowed them to be smart with the free agency, what's allowed them to be smart with re-signing their own guys and giving them more money, is the fact that they have been knocking it out of the park when it comes to the draft, where they're finding talented guys in the late first round, second round, third round, and fourth round that doesn't blow up their salary cap. Because they have these talented impact players that are on rookie deals, and it doesn't eat up a ton of their salary. So now they're going to start picking and choosing who gets the big contracts. And we said it before on the show. If Marshawn Lattimore wants to get that big contract in a couple years, he's going to have a bounce-back season. Because he was terrific as a rookie, fell back a little bit as a second-year player, had that sophomore slump, as they refer to it as. If he wants to, he needs to have a bounce-back year, especially if he's going to be the number one corner on a Super Bowl contender. But the reports are right now, Saints are working on that deal for Michael Thomas. Looking like trying to make him the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. I'm going to try to get that deal locked up, done, signed, sealed, and delivered before training camp. So if you're a member of the Who Dat Nation, that's good news for you this morning. We got to hit a break. More RP3 and Company coming up next right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, that's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to give us a call, pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Led off today's show talking about the reports coming out of New Orleans and elsewhere that the Saints, Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and company are in the works of giving Michael Thomas a brand new big old contract as he enters the final year of his rookie deal when he was selected in the second round of the 2016 draft. Reports are that Michael Thomas will be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. And that deal should get done, hopefully, before training camp begins. But that wasn't the only news coming out yesterday about a powerhouse team trying to add more talent or secure more talent or keep it. The Louisiana Raging Cajuns softball team officially yesterday added yet another Southeastern Conference transfer to their 2020 roster in Gina Torres, formerly of Mizzou. Torres was mainly used as a utility player during her time with the Tigers there in Columbia, Missouri. She'll essentially will come in and replace Cassidy Chaumont, who left to go to Missouri. In addition, Torres was a member of the 2017 Puerto Rican Junior National Team, and during the 2017 Women's Softball World Championship, she hit .344 with 8 runs scored and knocked in 3 runs in 29 at-bats. During her time with the junior national team, she played left field and catcher and was versatile enough to bat either second or third in the lineup. This is what Jerry Glasgow had to say about Ms. Torres. Quote, Gina has a very pure left-handed swing and also has the potential to develop into a very dangerous power hitter. She will provide us with the added depth at several key positions as she can catch, play the outfield, or cover first base if needed. Torres is from Rochester, New Hampshire. She was able to work her way into the lineup last season as a freshman when she started 29 games, 11 of those in SEC play. And she appeared in every game at the NCAA Los Angeles Regional. Here's the interesting thing for me. Not that they got themselves another talented Power 5 player. Remember last year they had Keely Milligan come in from Texas A&M, who Jerry Glasgow had coached when he was an assistant there before taking the UL job. She came in, I want to say, as a grad transfer, had one more season of eligibility, rewrote the record books for stolen bases. What I find interesting is that this is going to become the norm for not only programs like UL, but for all programs. Because we live in the era of the transfer portal. This is the fourth transfer UL has gotten this offseason alone. This is a team that was ranked top 10 nationally. This is a program that went undefeated in Sun Belt Conference play during the regular season and during the postseason tournament, and was one win away from winning the Ole Miss Regional. And they've received 4 transfers. In the third from a Power 5 program. Torres is joining fellow Missouri teammate Callie Martin, a junior outfielder, joining Oregon's Mia Camuso, a junior infielder, and a transfer from Miami-Dade College, Melissa Mayu. So 4 players are coming in as transfers for a softball program. And this is what, this is the landscape of college athletics right now. The transfer portal, these kids, a lot of them graduating early to come in as grad transfers so they can play immediately. Sometimes they're being allowed to play immediately because they're getting permission from the school that they're leaving to go to a different school, and they're signing off on them being transferred. Sometimes it's for medical reasons that they can play immediately, whatever it may be. This is the world we live in now. You remember the outrage that was expressed when Jerry Glasgow first took over after he was hired, poached away from Auburn because he was an assistant there before the season started, and then UL brought him in to replace Lotif. And what happened? He lost three players, two of the team's best sluggers and a starting pitcher, and they transferred to Oregon and Arizona, and there was outrage. Why are you leaving the team? Why are you doing this? Why are you going to go play over here? So forth and so forth. But Jerry's not stupid. Jerry understands if you're going to win at the collegiate level, and if he wants his team to make a run, that it has to be in addition of the recruits that you get coming out of high school. Jerry comes from Power 5 conferences. He coached at Auburn briefly, before that Texas A&M, and before that Georgia, and went to the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City. He knows you're going to need not only the homegrown talent in your state or in your region that you can recruit out of high school, but you're also now, because it's 2019, you're going to have to play the transfer game, and you're going to have to go out there and get multiple transfer. You're going to have to get multiple players out of the transfer portal year in and year out, and that's what he's done. Getting these players will help them continue having UL at such a high level. Because here's the thing. If they don't do this, they won't be able to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, because that's what everyone else is doing in the SEC, in the Pac-12, in the Big 12, and across the nation, not only in softball, but in baseball, football, basketball. Welcome to the era of the transfer portal. And UL softball's embracing it. And why shouldn't they? The rules there allowing them to do it. Why not take advantage? We got to hit a break. But more RP3 and Company coming up next after this, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. If you want to, give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We're about a day and a half, maybe even less than that, for the NBA draft. We already know the New Orleans Pelicans have the number one pick. They won that by winning the lottery. We expect them to take Zion Williamson. We expect Zion Williamson to be comfortable with coming to New Orleans, especially after our good friend Danny Broussard apparently helped with some type of open love letter from New Orleans to the world, and particularly to Zion Williamson. We'll talk more about that with the longtime state championship winning head coach of STM Cougars coming up at 7:02. But we know that's what's going to go down. But in the last couple days, there has been a plethora of rumors and reports that have come out regarding the rest of the draft. I'll just give you a little bit of a idea here. Reports have come out that the Memphis Grizzlies, who most people believe were very enamored with Murray State's Ja Morant to select him at the number 2 overall pick, apparently are cool on him. Not as enamored as you might think. And that they may be willing to trade out of the number 2 spot. We've also heard the rumors that The Pels are going to try to do a litany of different things with the number four overall pick. That they could try to trade up to the number two spot with Memphis so they could get R.J. Barrett out of Duke, Zion Williamson's teammate. We've also heard reports that the Pels could entertain an offer from the Atlanta Hawks to take Atlanta's number 8 and number 10 overall picks. Both will be lottery picks. Giving up their number 4 to take that number 8 and that number 10. We've also heard that they possibly will package someone and the number 4 overall pick and send it to the Washington Wizards to get Bradley Beal, who apparently is on the trading block. We also know now that the New York Knicks turned down the Atlanta Hawks offer of giving up the number 8 and the number 10 pick and then something else to get up and take the number 3 pick away from the Knicks. So what's going to happen after one, that's going to be what's going to be surprising. Those are going to produce you those moments of the draft. Because you know Zion's going number one. He's going to put on that fresh new Pelicans lid. Boom, he's going to walk on the stage. He's going to shake the commissioner's hand, the whole nine yards. We know that. That's going to be a done deal. But what's going to happen at 2, 3, 4, and the rest of the lottery is an absolute guessing game. And it's been a while since we've had that kind of intrigue heading into NBA draft night. Usually we know the top 3, 4 picks are kind of locked in, right? Unless the Knicks do something stupid, which reports are that the Knicks are enamored with the guard out of Vanderbilt. Did you see Vanderbilt play last year? They're going to pass on R.J. Barrett to take a kid out of Vandy. Oh, the Knicks. This is what they do. So, hell, R.J. Barrett may just fall to New Orleans at 4. This is why I think with all of this going on, all these reports, all these rumors, a lot of it is BS. 90% of it is nothing but BS, ladies and gentlemen. It's stuff that is leaked to media members from team officials who are wanting to try to dictate things and hope a guy falls to them and how to manipulate the draft through media reports. That's just how that works. They do it every year. It's just not the NBA. The NFL does it too. So most of the stuff you're going to hear is BS. But something crazy is going to go down. It always does. Someone will reach for a prospect. A prospect will fall for no good reason. And the Pels hold a lot of those cards on what they can do. They can go in so many different directions with that 4th overall pick that they got, that they received in the trade of Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers. What should they do? Should they just stand pat? Should they build up more picks for not only this year and next year? Should they flip that pick into a veteran player like a Bradley Beal? But they hold all the cards because the Pels already have the number one overall pick. They're taking what everyone considers to be the best player, a generational talent in this year's draft. They already got him. So everything else is kind of just lagniappe. It's the cherry on top of the ice cream sundae here. And they can dictate what everyone else does. Because if they decide to be bold, and Griff is known to being bold, if they decide to be bold and say, you know what? We're not staying pat at number 4. Thank you, Atlanta. We appreciate that offer of the number 8 and the number 10 pick and a player or whatever. But you know what? We're not interested. And you know what, Knicks? You don't want to give up your number 3 spot. We get it. That's great. That's fine. You know what, Wizards? We like Bradley Beal. He's a good player, but you want too much. No. We're good. Don't be surprised by anything the Pels do come Thursday night. And don't be surprised if Griffin somehow finds a way to take that number four pick that he got for the Anthony Davis trade, and he flips that and trades with Memphis. And then gets the number two overall pick and takes Ja Morant, who you could pair up with Drew Holiday, or takes R.J. Barrett, Zion Williamson's teammate. Because there's only three guys heading into the draft that people think are the elite prospects. But as we know, there's always guys that can be found later in the draft. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard. Those are three guys that took the court in the NBA Finals that proved that. You don't have to be a lottery pick or a high pick or high lottery pick to be a generational talent. Oh, Draymond Green, he was a second-round pick too. So it'll be interesting what they possibly could do. They could flip it into additional picks this year, trade with the Hawks. Atlanta is desperate to move up. They're willing to give up a player and picks to move up because they have identified someone at the four spot that they believe will not be there to drop down to them at eight. And that's all it takes. The only thing it takes is finding a team that is in love with a particular player. A player that they can't live without. And then you can just fleece them. And you just saw Griffin do that with the Los Angeles Lakers, right? They were desperate to have Anthony Davis. Wanted him. Had been pursuing him for a year. People lost their jobs. They still wanted him. So Griff was like, okay, I'll take three players. I'll take your first-round pick this year. I'll take two more first-round picks that'll be unprotected. And I'll have the ability to trade out and swap picks over the course of the next few years, and I'll control your entire draft process in between now and 2025. And the Lakers just said, okay. So much so that now the Lakers are realizing that they don't have the cap space that they need to sign another max free agent. Anthony Davis is not going to break. Is not going to give up his $4 million trade bonus. So now they're trying desperately, which I just love. They're trying desperately to free up cap space by trying to renegotiate this trade with the Pels and find someone else to take on guys on their roster that no one's ever heard of. Trade them away for like second round picks so they can have enough space. To sign a max free agent. That's a well-run organization right there. Like you didn't already know what the salary cap was going to be. You already didn't know what your situation was going to be like before you made the trade for Anthony Davis. That's called poor leadership. Thankfully, the Pels no longer have that. They have David Griffin in place. And he's brought on Langdon as his GM. And they're going to make another big move. And something else to watch out for. What other teams are doing or not doing. Take a moment and pay attention to what's happening in Boston. Kyrie Irving has opted out. He has left. More than likely, reports have that he's going to try to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. Okay? They decided not to give up Jason Tatum in talks with the Pels for Anthony Davis. Boom. So the Pels trade Anthony Davis. All we've heard about is Anthony Davis is going to the Pels. Anthony Davis is either going to the Lakers or the Celtics. Remember, it was the Celtics. He's going to the Celtics. Danny Ainge is going to pull it off. He has all the assets. Well, here the Celtics have all these assets. They didn't get Anthony Davis. Kyrie Irving's walking. And, oh, by the way, last night, Al Horford, who apparently was on the verge of re-upping with the Celtics, walked away from Boston. walked away and is going to sign a four-year contract elsewhere. Those are reports coming out of the Boston Herald. Boy, a veteran big man would be really a nice addition for the Pels, wouldn't it? Especially a guy that's an all-star player like Al Horford, who could put Zion Williamson underneath his wing. Pels have the money to sign him, too. Just pointing out. Boston's dysfunction benefits New Orleans. The Lakers' dysfunction is benefiting New Orleans. Could Houston's dysfunction as well? Apparently CP3 and James Harden can't play together. There's trade demands that have been made in conflicting reports. Morey's having to come out and say there's tension, but no trade demands have gone on. Others' teams' dysfunction, Lakers, Rockets, Celtics, benefits New Orleans. And benefits a very aggressive and yet whip-smart vice president of basketball operations in David Griffin. If Griffin can find a way to make this team better with a trade, whether it's the number four overall pick or signing a free agent like Al Horford or someone else, he will do it. Can't believe I'm saying this. That in a matter of a few months, the New Orleans Pelicans have become one of the best-ran franchises in NBA. Never thought I'd see the day where I'd say that. But here we are. Be interested to see what happens tomorrow night in the NBA draft. Because the Pels hold all the cards. And I can't wait to figure out and see what David Griffin pulls out of his hat tomorrow night. We got to hit a break, but we'll come back and we'll close out hour number one right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Want to keep the talk moving on the what the Pels could or could not do. Sports Illustrated updated their mock draft. Their latest mock draft, the 10.0 version, does take into account the Anthony Davis trade and how that shakes up the lottery. They have Zion Williamson coming to the Pelicans, obviously, at number one overall. They still have Ja Morant going to the Memphis Grizzlies at number two. And they have R.J. Barrett going to number three to the New York Knicks, the guard-forward combo. At number four, and this is what they say about this, they have the Pels, if they stay at number four, taking Jarrett Culver, the shooting guard out of Texas Tech. Remember, the Red Raiders reached the Final Four, surprise team of the tournament. They say it is a strong possibility, though, that New Orleans looks to package this for a more established player to beef up the current team. Also, there's going to be a market for this pick. The Hawks have interest in moving up, and the guard-needy Phoenix Suns and Chicago Bulls also could ensure they secure the guy they want by coming up to number four and trading with New Orleans. Both Atlanta and Phoenix have expressed interest in Culver, and the Hawks have a significant amount of draft capital to spare if they want to move up. Feasibly, they should be able to make the best offer to the Pelicans for the number four overall pick. There are strong indications right now that New Orleans will aim to maximize the value of this pick. But they do say that you could see New Orleans, if they do stay here, taking Culver, the young man, out of Texas Tech. I don't think they're either going to trade up to get R.J. Barrett, or possibly, look, R.J. Barrett could fall to them if the Knicks do their typical Knick stuff and make a boneheaded decision. But there's going to be a lot of teams. Just mentioned them. Phoenix, Chicago, Atlanta. That are going to want one of those shooting guards and are willing to trade up to do it. And if you're the Pels, Chicago or Phoenix, maybe you get a player back and their pick. Add depth, maybe a young player, maybe a veteran player. You have all the cards, and teams tend to get desperate. Now, historically speaking, Chicago's leadership with the Bulls, they're notoriously kind of cheap, and they don't like giving up a lot for picks. So I wouldn't expect them to really be that much of a player. It'd be very surprising if they gave up a player and a pick to move up to take someone, which is why their franchise is kind of in the doldrums. But Phoenix could be a player, and definitely Atlanta. A lot of reports are coming out that the Hawks are so desperate that they're willing to give up both an 8, their 8 and 10 picks right now in this year's draft, both lottery picks, to move up and maybe even give a player in a future pick. That's how desperate they are. And if you're smart, you take advantage of the desperate teams like that. So we'll see. Still plenty of time. Definitely a lot of intrigue surrounding the Pelicans. The guy that could kind of throw things off, the player to kind of watch, is Darius Garland. That's the point guard, the freshman out of Vanderbilt. A lot of talk about the Knicks working him out again, falling in love with him. He's projected to go number 6 overall to the Phoenix Suns in SI's latest projected mock draft. But if the Knicks fall in love with him, he could go 3, and all of a sudden you get R.J. Barrett falling to 4, and then that even empowers the Pels even more so. They could take him, or then they all of a sudden they have one of the top 3 players in the draft fall to them, and you're going to see a lot of other teams making phone calls on draft night. That's going to do it for hour number 1 in the books. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk to the STM Cougar legend himself. Danny Broussard is going to join us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU's for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, and, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to hour number 2 of RP3 and Company. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We began today's show talking a little bit about New Orleans Saints. Apparently have begun contract negotiations with star wide receiver Michael Thomas. They appear primed to make him the highest paid wide receiver in all of the NFL, and we'll have that deal in place hopefully by the beginning of training camp. We also touch base on the Raging Cajun softball team embracing the transfer portal like everyone else is doing across college athletics by bringing in yet another Power 5 transfer, this one out of Missouri, for next season. And then we spent the better part of hour number 1 talking about the Pels, what they could do with that number 4 overall pick, the flexibility they could have. They could flip it into a veteran player. They could get multiple picks. They could trade up. They could trade down. They hold all the cards after the Anthony Davis trade. Right now, it's time for us to talk a little bit more about what the Pels are going to do with their number 1 overall pick, who is projected to be Zion Williamson, because this next man was involved in making that happen. Well, that's right. In addition of leading the STM Cougars to 28 straight playoff appearances, 21 district championships, reaching the state quarterfinals 22 times, state tournament 14 times, winning four state championships, including the last two back-to-back, and currently sits at 988 wins, just 12 wins shy of becoming only the fourth coach in the state's history to reach the 1,000-win plateau. It's our good friend, the one and only, Danny Broussard. Coach, how you doing this morning?
You're giving me way too much credit, you've been investigating here. I'm impressed.
Well, let's talk. I mean, you have a tremendous resume, Coach, and we appreciate you making time for us. But apparently you are now working for the state of Louisiana in their promotional tourism department, helping out Marty Smith of ESPN on this segment that he produced about New Orleans and about the state of Louisiana. Tell us, how did you get involved with that? How did the STM boys basketball coach get involved with making this video, letting Zion Williamson know why Louisiana and New Orleans is so great?
Well, I wish I could say they got me because of my basketball talents, but that's not the truth at all. I'm calling you Marty. You know, Raymond, it's kind of like being at the right place at the right time. Kind of the story of my life. I guess I've just been in the right places. But Barry Toops, who owns Crawfish Haven in Catholic, I've been in this place a couple of times. In fact, I did a little crawfish excursion once. It's really pretty cool. If you haven't, you know, it's funny. You're living in Louisiana. I mean, I crawfished a little bit when I was younger, you know, but a lot of people, you know, you eat crawfish, but how, you know, to go crawfishing is kind of an experience. It really is, to see how they do it. But anyway, I've been here a couple of times. So they called, I guess they just really basically, Google says, this is what Marty told me. Marty told me that they wanted to do a segment, and they wanted to do, like, on the streets in New Orleans. And he goes, oh, man, you know what? He said, I don't really like those kind of things. You know, he said, you never need to get, I just not be. So he said, he called the guy that produced it with him, and he said, the first time he worked with this guy that produced it, I think the guy's in New Orleans area. He said, he never worked with this guy. He calls and says, hey, I want to do something different. So the guy said, all right, what do you think? And he said, man, I want to find out the culture in Louisiana. I just want to do something. What's Zion going to be experiencing? What makes New Orleans special? What makes Louisiana special? So he basically looked crawfishing up, and my boy Barry Toops, who is a Henry native. Barry and I were, you know, in school together at the same time. I went to Moe, we went to Henry, so we played each other, you know, in Barry high school days, you know. And then again, I went to his crawfishing thing. When the ESPN called him to say they were doing, she said, look, man, I know about crawfish. He said, I know nothing about basketball. I said, oh, don't worry about that. So he said, I got to call Danny Broussard. So he called me and said, hey, look, ESPN's doing a feature. I need you to come help me out, because if you ask a question about basketball, you're going to be my backup, because I know nothing about it. I said, I'm glad to do it. So at the time, we thought that Zion was going to be coming. That was the kind of the plan that he got to be coming. You know, and doing the crawfishing thing with him, but he wasn't able to work that to his schedule. So that kind of thing. But they still want to do the story. So they had a crawfish bar, a kind of a little exclusive party at this place in New Orleans. I can't remember the name we went to, but it's kind of a neat little place. It's outdoor. You know, they got the food trucks and stuff. It's an outdoor thing. Actually, it was raining when we got there, but the rain cleared up on Saturday. But they invited us to this little thing. And you know, how crazy was this, Raymond? But we get there and we're talking and we're meeting. We just met Marty. We met the producer. We're talking about what's going to happen on Sunday morning. And the guys from the camera guys start coming and they come to Marty and they say, hey, man, we just got a breaking news about the Pelicans. They traded with the Lakers. And he said, wait, we're trying to confirm. Once you confirm, let's go on. So that's when I took my phone out, and Marty gets up on the top and announces, you know, what the trade had just happened. You know, so it was kind of weird. I mean, you know, obviously you can't plan something like that, you know. But it was crazy that at this party for Zion that the news breaks about the trade. So that was kind of cool. We did that. They did a crawfish boil. But hey, Raymond, they can't. They don't know. There's different jobs. They can't boil crawfish like us, man. They let us. There for like 30 minutes. I mean, it was all right, but they can't ball like we do here in Acadiana. Now they don't know how to do it, brother.
Coach, I love it. Coach saying that they can't boil crawfish as good as we can here in Acadiana. We're going to try to improve our connection with Coach Broussard, get him back on the line here. And what Coach was talking about is that he got involved
with a project with ESPN, Marty Smith in particular. For you guys that know, Marty Smith was a longtime NASCAR guy for ESPN, but they've branched him out to doing more kind of more featurey kind of interviews and featurey stories for the network. They sent down Marty to, you know, welcome Zion Williamson to show the culture of Louisiana and the promise ahead for the Pelicans and their fan base. So, and Coach Broussard was part of that.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great now, Coach. I can hear you great now.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Yeah, the last thing we heard from you that was clear is that you threw a little shade about that how they bowled that crawfish, that he didn't do it as well as we do it here in Acadiana, Coach.
Yeah, I didn't say anything that night, but when those producers came and the camera guys came on Sunday, I said, "Hey guys, that crawfish was all right, but y'all gonna have to experience them down here because we can ball them much better than those guys." So they got a kick out of that. They said, "Oh yeah, that's not the best." Well, no, that's not the best crawfish, by no means. But anyway, so go back to that crawfish ball. It's kind of neat. So they balled the crawfish and they were filming that. You know, it is kind of neat to see behind the scenes, Raymond, how they do this. I mean, like, I'll give an example, right? So we meet at 7:30 at Barry's. Now, so we filmed this thing on Saturday night at the Crawfish Bowl in New Orleans. And these guys, you know, we got to drive back. And these guys here, they're telling how long they stayed. And they were at the Crawfish Farm for 7:30 on Sunday morning, which was happened to be Father's Day morning, and getting all their equipment out and starting to film. We get in the pond at about, I guess, 8:15. And 2 hours and 50 minutes later, 10:30, we getting out because Marty had a plane flight out at 2 o'clock out of New Orleans, so he had to try to get back. And he told us, "Look, I need to be out of this pond by the latest 10:30. So that's kind of how we did it. But you know, for 2 hours and 50 minutes of filming that, and I guess on that part that aired last night, total amount of time, but maybe 2 minutes, you know, 2 minutes of that scenery, you know, it's crazy, man, how much they do. So it was interesting behind the scenes to see how they film it and what they do, and you know, it was really pretty cool.
Well, we're talking with longtime STM boys basketball coach, the legend Danny Broussard, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Coach, I have to ask you, now that you've been on the four-letter network in a big TV special, how's it feel to be an emerging television star from the state of Louisiana?
Well, I did get a bunch of phone calls yesterday, that's for sure. People, this is kind of funny, though. So I got a friend of mine. He was in San Francisco, California. He said, I'm in my hotel room. So I'm actually in the bathroom area. I got ESPN on, and he said, "I hear this voice." I'm like, "Wait, what is this? Is this?" And he said, "It goes around the corner of the bathroom." He said, "This is the TV. You know, they kind of did my voice first, and then they show picture of me." And he goes, "My goodness, what the heck, Danny Broussard? What is he doing on ESPN?" So yeah, it is kind of cool. I actually got a taste of that before with when Mackenzie Borg made it to the American Idol Final Four. You know,
yeah.
So it's not my first time on national TV because they came in and filmed. They made the Final Four, so they wanted to do a hometown thing. So they came in and Raymond, the same thing there. They came into the gym. They asked if they could come film, and they wanted to be at night because they wanted to show Mackenzie coming out, putting the lights on like he was, you know, going to come practice and shoot. And so they said, "Can we go at night?" I said, "Yeah, that's no problem, whatever." You know, so we took me like at, I don't know, 8 or 9 o'clock, and at midnight we turned the lights out, and they're packing their stuff up. And again, they showed about, you know, a minute of that stuff on the American Idol actually scenes. It was kind of funny, but you know, so yeah, it's kind of cool. You know, I mean, it is neat. I mean, again, everybody says, "How'd you get on?" And I, you know, can you believe, you know, my good friend was a crawfish farmer. That's how I got on ESPN. So that's kind of funny how that worked out. But yeah, Marty was kind of, you know, intrigued because when he heard that I was a, you know, Barry told him about it. He didn't have a clue who the heck I was, obviously. So Barry was telling him, you know, bragging about, "Oh yeah, this guy's coaching, you know, 1-4 state championships." So he kind of got intrigued by that and started asking a bunch of questions because he was, you know, he played high school sports. He was a football guy, played in Virginia. But I tell you, Raymond, Marty is a really guy. I mean, he, you know, I hear stories about some reporters can be this guy down to earth, man. He's a cool dude. He really is. He spent a lot of time with us. We just talked about different stuff, and you know, he is a really, really nice fellow, man. It was nice meeting him.
We're talking with Coach Broussard, longtime STM boys basketball coach. here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. All right, Coach, I have to ask you, you know, it looks like Zion's going to be coming to New Orleans and to the Pelicans there at the number one overall pick. How excited are you to see what many people believe to be a generational talent come to New Orleans and kind of reinvigorate that franchise? How are you feeling about Zion Williamson coming to the Pels?
Yeah, man, I think it's going to be really awesome, you know. And it looks like the other nice thing too is that I think they're going to kind of get a build a little bit around them, you know, with this trade. I mean, think about it, three first round picks. I mean, you know, in the next couple of years. So, man, I just like the moves this guy Griffin's making. I just think he's, you know, they got a basketball guy in there. He seems to be. I mean, I don't know this guy from Adam, but he seems to know what he's doing. I just like all the things he's doing. We talked about this, you and I, before. I'm not a big Patrick fan, to be totally honest. And I saw when I heard you yesterday, they extended or whatever his contract a little bit, right? Extended it. So I'm not really fired about that. I like Monty Williams much better than I do Gentry. But besides that, I mean, I just like what they're putting together, man. And, you know, some people are thinking, is he really going to be that good? I mean, sure, time's going to tell on that. Nobody knows for sure, but man, I gotta believe he's gonna be a really really nice NBA player just because you know, I mean, he's just got that great body. I know his shooting needs to improve a little bit, you know, but he's not as bad as Ball is. At least he can shoot it a little bit, but he's just such a, his body is just built for the NBA to me. I think he's gonna be a dominating player. So, and like I said, I think he got some things to be able to build around him. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I always try to think about three or four games a year. As a matter of fact, they have this thing called the Court of Dreams, and we have played in that the last about 10 years. We pick a home game, we pick a date, we find an opponent, and we go play before the Pelicans game, like in the afternoon, you know, let's go from like 1 to 3, and we can play a game in there. So we've always gone that, and we'll obviously stay and watch the game that night. And then I go a couple other times, so, man, I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to make trips to Dallas a little bit more often now that with this group. I'm excited about what they're gonna bring to the table.
Coach, I have to ask you while I got you on the phone. What you think they're going to do with that number four pick? You think they're going to flip it into a veteran player? Do you think they're going to get more picks for that pick? Or do you think they're going to trade up, trade down? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, I'd like to see get like stay young and get, let's build from a young group. But all indications are is that they're going to try to get a veteran guy, you know. So I think they're going to probably trade, but. And I'd love to see it just stay with a young group, get signed with another young guy, and build from there. You know, that's what I'd like to see. But yeah, I just have a gut feeling they're gonna trade for a veteran guy. I think they're gonna go try to get a shooter for sure. You know, whoever they pick, I think they're gonna try to get a scorer because that seems like where they're gonna be eating. You know.
Well, Coach, appreciate you making time for us. I mean, I know you're now this. Big time superstar on television, but I appreciate you making time for the little people on radio still. You know, it hasn't gone to your head quite yet, my friend.
Yeah, right. I'm at school right now, so getting ready to start basketball camp with 90 campers coming in. So it ain't all glamour, brother. I got to go to work right here. Got to get after it. Yep.
Well, Coach, appreciate you making
all right.
Appreciate making okay, the time, brother. Good. And thanks for helping out, doing something good for the state. So appreciate you as always, Coach.
You bet, Raymond. Always a pleasure. Take care. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
You too. That's a longtime SDM head boys basketball coach. A legend, Danny Broussard, joining us. Gotta love it. Even during that segment, Danny was like, I made sure to tell him that crawfish bowl wasn't as good. It just wasn't. It's not what we do here at Acadiana. That man always reps. He reps the state, but he loves repping Acadiana. It'd be hard-pressed to find another person that loves this area more than him. We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up next on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber. 133 and 1133 in high definition. Terrific conversation with Danny Broussard about his role in the Four Letter Network's special or segment by Marty Smith, kind of as a love letter about Louisiana and how Coach got involved with that. Want to wrap up this segment, though. talking about the passing of a legend that occurred yesterday. LSU Hall of Fame fullback, LSU Hall of Fame player, Ebert Van Buren, passed away yesterday. He was a member of the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame and a two-way football star in the years after World War II. Van Buren passed away on Friday in Monroe at the age of 94. Van Buren's late brother, Steve, is a member of the LSU and NFL Halls of Fame. Ebert Van Buren was a 2015 inductee into the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame. Interesting thing about Van Buren is this, and this is the time that he played in. He never played high school football. But that didn't matter to former LSU football head coach Bernie Moore. Coach Moore found Van Buren playing on the Metairie playgrounds. Just found a guy playing on the playground and recruited him to LSU in 1947. From pickup games on the playground to college football, it was surely an adjustment for Van Buren in conditioning and in learning the game. It's what Van Buren recalled. I remember an incident when we were at practice with Bernie Moore's coach. He told me to go out in the flat and catch a pass. I ran over the goal line. Of course, that was a mistake. I got back to the huddle, and coach said, I told you to go in the flat. I said, Coach, I don't even know where that is. But it didn't take long for Van Buren to catch up and understand the game of football. He ended up lettering 3 years as he played on both sides of the football at fullback and at linebacker. He helped lead the Tigers in 1949 to a Sugar Bowl berth as the squad posted wins over three different conference champions en route to the bowl invitation. One of the highlights of that particular season back in 1949 was the 34-0 victory over Texas A&M as Van Buren in that game rushed for 121 yards.
At fullback.
At fullback. Different.
I understand
different
it's a different game.
Yeah, different game, different
I understand
different
it's a different game, but let me ask you this. Was there also a running back or a halfback?
Yeah.
There you go. That's all that matters.
Flashback, yeah.
Was another faster, more athletic guy.
He was joining the backfield with two other guys. There was three running
backs.
Yeah,
there were three dudes back there, and he went for a buck 50.
Yeah, with three other guys. Van Buren long said one of the best moments of his career at LSU was being named a team captain for the 1950 season. After that season, Van Buren was invited to play in the Shrine Bowl and the Senior Bowl, both. And after his impressive career in college football, he was the number one draft choice of the Philadelphia Eagles in 1951. He played for the Eagles for 3 years and was selected to the Pro Bowl in 1952. And following his career, Van Buren returned to LSU to earn his master's in psychology. He began a private practice in which he specialized in working with children with autism and special needs. He also served as the disability determination spokesperson for the state of Louisiana. And he worked as a psychologist for the Wynn Correctional Center. He practiced for over 60 years in assisting young patients that couldn't afford expenses towards their own school athletics. So, a fantastic career at LSU, but also an even more important career in the private sector. He also, this is one of the type of individuals where you look back and you look at his life and you're looking over this, and then you look at your own life and you're like, wow, mine kind of falls short. In addition to all that, he also served as a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Naval Reserve for 8 years. On top of his private practice and military service, he also earned his certification as a scuba diving instructor and taught at UL Monroe, the YMCA, and Louisiana College for 41 years. Yeah. Ebert was actually born on an island in Honduras in 1924. He moved from there to New Orleans at the age of 8 to continue with his education until joining the service in 43. He served in the U.S. Army 96th Infantry Division in the Pacific during World War II from 43 until 45. He was part of the Philippines campaigns as well as the Okinawa, Japan campaigns, where he was wounded in intense heavy combat on Hacksaw Ridge in the 29th day of that campaign. Man was awarded the Purple Heart, two Bronze Stars, Liberation Medal, and a slew of other awards. One of the best to ever do it for LSU, a patriot, a veteran, and a man who took up social causes as well. So, our condolences out to the Van Buren family on the passing of the LSU Hall of Famer. We got to hit a break. More RP3 and Company coming up next, right here on 103.7 The Game.
3-1. And Bregman drives this one pretty deep to left center field. Racing back on it is Irwin looking up. That ball is gone. A two-run home run for Alex Bregman. And the Astros are within a run. It's 4-3, Cincinnati.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Houston Astros, they dropped their third game in a row last night. 12-0 in the finale of that series against the Toronto Blue Jays there at Minute Maid on Sunday. Then they dropped Monday's game against the Cincinnati Reds, and then they lost again to the Reds yesterday. Besides Alex, in spite of Alex Bregman's home run. Game three of that series, as part of this seven-game road trip, will be wrapped up today, and you can listen to it live. Day Baseball right here on 103.7 The Game. Astro launch, 11 o'clock. First pitch, 11:35. Astros at Reds. You can listen to it live. That's right. No Jim Rome show today. Houston Astros baseball, Day Baseball right here on 103.7 The Game. So make sure to stay, just keep it right here. Listen to this show until 9 o'clock. Listen to Dan Patrick for a few hours. Then boom, Houston Astros baseball. It's not a bad way to spend your day, just saying. As I said, the Astros are on a road trip after they wrap up this three-game set at the Cincinnati Reds. They'll be traveling to take on the New York Yankees for a set. And the Astros lost yesterday with Justin Verlander on the bump. Think about that. He was 9-2 heading into yesterday's game. Looked like the clear-cut front runner for the American League Cy Young Award. And the Reds, man. Jesse Winker and Derek Dietrich both homered off of Verlander in the first inning. That set the tone right off the bat there in last night's game. And then they would go on to hold on for a 4-3 victory. That helped the Reds clinch their first series win in nearly a month.
Joey Votto not holding down first base.
No.
It's a different Reds team. There's Jay Bruce? Wasn't he on that team too when they were really good? Or,
yeah.
I mean, the Reds for a while there were a team that, you know, to be reckoned with, but
not anymore.
But we talked about it yesterday a little bit, and I think it still lends to that the Astros have been playing so well with essentially, you know, half their roster being backups, and they've played so well that this is. To me, it just looks like maybe a little bit of it catching up with them a little bit.
It's a little bit of a lull.
That law of averages to where when you're playing with so many backups, you would think you would lose X amount of games. But then when the Astros started with this lineup full of backups because of the injuries, they were winning a lot and they weren't losing very many games. And now maybe I think that's kind of falling back down to earth and leveling itself out.
Yeah. And Altuve, we know, is close to coming back to the lineup. Springer has been designated for his rehab assignment. So two of their big bats, two of their best hitters, are on the verge of coming back here in the next week or two. So this is a little bit of a lull. It's the first series that the Astros have dropped since April 29th to May 2nd. The three home runs. The Reds hit three home runs off of Verlander, and that made the difference. That's how they scored all their runs. And as great as Verlander has been this year, he's 9-3 now on the season. He has given up a considerable amount of home runs.
You got that Zach Hess syndrome.
Ooh, nice, nice.
Except he can get the other guys out too, I guess. Not that Zach couldn't. But.
Verlander had not allowed a pair of home runs in one inning all season. There in the first, Winker connected on Verlander's fourth pitch of the night. It was the third leadoff home run allowed by the right-hander this season. Joey Votto, he's still on the team, Cody.
Is he really?
Yes, he got a double.
There you go.
And that set up Dietrich's two-run blast, his first home run since May 28th, and that made it 3-0. Boom, just like that. So, I mean, they got right off of it. And then Kyle Farmer added a home run in the seventh off of Verlander, who has now given up three home runs in each of his last two starts. Verlander did go seven innings while striking out eight. Yeah, this is a little interesting. As great as he's been, he's allowed 20 home runs. 17 of them have been solos this year. In his last two starts, he's given up 10 hits, six of them being home runs. His career high for home runs allowed in a season was 30. That was with Detroit in 2016 when they thought he was on his decline, and then they would trade him the next year in the middle of the season to the Houston Astros. He's allowed 20. So,
want to take a guess at how old Joey Votto is?
33.
35.
Wow.
Yeah. You got a career batting average of .309.
I would have never thought.
Joey Votto is a dog.
Never would have thought the Votto would have been that good of a player.
I thought he was retired. I'm trying to show you how much I know. He's Canadian. That's what it is. He's Canadian. That explains a lot. No, it doesn't.
That explains a lot. Alex Bregman did have the big highlight.
He tried.
He hit that two-run home run blast in the eighth off of Amir Garrett. But it wasn't enough. The Astros stranded 10 batters, six in scoring position. And that's after losing the series opener 4-3 on Monday.
Three in a row.
They're going to try to avoid the sweep by the Cincinnati Reds. Once again, today. Day baseball right here on 103.7 The Game. Astro launch will start at 11 o'clock. First pitch for Astros at Reds will be 11:30. Verlander, despite getting tagged with the loss and giving up those home runs, he did pass Mickey Loewich for 19th place on the career strikeout list. He's now up to 2,839 career strikeouts. 18th place is Jim Bunning at 2,855. And I do believe Verlander will get there shortly.
Yeah, two starts, I'm going to say. 15, that's about so 16 strikeouts to get there.
So he's
Ks,
two starts. He's
8
two
Ks, starts. Yeah.
He's two starts.
That's asking for two good starts, but we're also talking about Justin Verlander here, who had previously passed up Cy Young on that same list. So shout out to your boy there. Raymond, you want to play that game we play each and every week? It's Wednesday. I feel like we do it on Wednesdays. It's that time of the week, finding out how many games are the Astros in first place in the AL West. Last week when we did this, the Astros were 9 games. I don't know why I remember that. It just sticks. They were 9 games in first place. They are still in first.
Yes, in the American League West. Yes.
Correct. Ahead of the Texas Rangers, they are still in second. Would you like to venture a guess?
The hated Tejas Rangers.
Of course. How many games are the Astros ahead of said Rangers?
I do not follow Texas Rangers baseball.
No, nor should you.
Nor should I, yes. I do know that my Atlanta Braves have won like 10 of 11.
Yeah, I was going to mention that after the fact. They are doing very well. I was going to get to that.
I'm cautiously optimistic about my Bravos. That's it. That's side discussion. So the question is, how many games in first place are the Houston Astros above the Texas Rangers? Last week it was 9. Now they've lost 3 games in a row. I say their lead in the American League West is now 7.5.
You're not far off. The Rangers are worse than that. It's 8.5. Now, they've lost 3 in a row over the course of the last week. They've gone 5-5 in their last 10 games at the Astros, but so have the Rangers. So there
you
go.
Thank you, Rangers.
That's how that works. The Astros, 8.5 games in first place. They still hold the second-best record in the American League overall. There are a couple of games behind the Twins. The Twins, still the best record in the American League. So a big shout-out to the Twinkies there. The Twins actually have the second-best record overall. The best record in the major leagues goes to...
the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Correct. Very good. The Dodgers, they're 49-25. They hold a 10-game lead in the NL West there. But you mentioned your Bravos. Got to give them some love. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. Have gotten well, well above 500 at 43-31. 2.5 games ahead of Aaron Nola and the Phillies for first place in the NL East.
Yes.
So there's a little love for RP3.
Oh, that's going to be a dogfight all year with them.
Oh, same with the NL Central. The Brewers, the Cubs, and the Cardinals are going to jockey for position, it seems like, all season. Whoever comes out on top. I mean, it's going to be a fun wild card race, too, if that is the way I'm looking at it shaping out now, because you've got – do we consider the Mets? The Mets aren't competitive. I'm going to drop them out. So you've got two competitive teams in the East. You've got three in the Central. You've got three in the West.
Yep.
I mean, that's right there. That's six teams vying for two spots, right? I mean, it's going to be fun if everything holds serve. But the biggest news here is that the Astros, despite their struggles – over the last, 10 games or so, 5-5 there, three losses in a row, still hold a very solid 8.5 game lead in the division.
And they also have good news coming, as I mentioned
like you
earlier
said,
in the segment. Second baseman Jose Altuve, former league MVP, will be activated for the final game of this series. So he is going to be activated today.
They really want to avoid that sweep, huh?
The 2017 AL MVP has been sidelined since May 11th due to a strained left hamstring. Also good news, outfielder Springer Dinger himself, George Springer, is expected to start a rehab assignment on Thursday with AA Corpus Christi. He's been out since May 25th, also with a strained left hamstring. So, Altuve going to be activated. How much he plays, I don't know. Probably be in a pinch hitter kind of mode. You don't want to rush him back into playing. But you get Altuve back starting today. He'll be activated, and Springer's going to start his rehab assignment tomorrow with AA Corpus Christi, and yet you're still 8.5 games up in the American League West.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. I hear Altuve getting activated. I'm like, oh, good, he's back in the lineup. But this is an interleague series being played in a National League ballpark. There's no DH for the Astros right now. So if Altuve's going to play, it's going to be either – in the field, full go, or maybe just a pinch hit spot. We'll have to see. But we won't have to wait long to see, will we, Raymond?
Or here, because you can listen to the game live right here on 103.7 The Game.
But not very long from now. Usually we would tease this and it's like, yeah, you still got like 12 hours or so before the game starts. Not today.
You still got time to get off work.
Yeah.
Go
not
get
today.
Dinner.
Make plans for lunch.
Nah. You make your plans with lunch, you just stay right here with 103.7 The Game. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, talk a little LSU football recruiting to close out hour number two right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline. That's 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. LSU football lands themselves another commitment for the 2020 class. They're picking these guys up left and right here over the summer, and they're trying real hard to make that 2020 class to be the best in the nation. And once again, the focus has been across the offensive and defensive lines. Yesterday, they picked up defensive lineman Eric Taylor out of the state of Alabama. It's the 19th pledge in the 2020 class for the LSU Tigers. Taylor made the commitment after an official visit with his mother to Baton Rouge this past weekend. Alabama, Auburn,
Arkansas, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Oregon, and a slew of others had made official offers to the 6'5", 280-pound defensive lineman. He's ranked by the 247 Sports Composite Index as a top 25 defensive tackle in the country and a top 300 player nationally. He wrapped up his junior season last year for Hewitt Trussville High School with 47 tackles and 12 tackles for a loss and 3 sacks. The main recruiter on him for LSU is running backs coach Tommy Robinson. And LSU now has 19 commitments for the class of 2020. Cody Schutz, our diehard LSU fan in-house right here.
I'm going to have to get the word
Delta Media.
I'm going to have to get the word diehard tattooed on me somewhere.
You should.
I really should.
How do you feel about your Tigers going into Alabama's backyard and taking one of the best defensive linemen in the country and getting him to come to Baton Rouge, commit to LSU for the 2020 class?
Can I be 100% honest with you?
But I always want you to be 100%.
Meh.
Meh?
Meh.
Why is that?
Because it's just a commitment. Nick Saban's not done until there's a...
There's my guy. There it is.
Signature till there's ink on paper or faxes being received, whatever the protocol is for that.
It's still faxes, yes.
It's meh.
Which is crazy to me.
It is.
It's 2019, but we're still doing national letters of intent with fax machines.
So until that fax is received, either in the early signing period or in the normal signing period. Good. Yay. I'm glad. You know, you're doing good. You've got him.
It's June.
But you've got him in your crosshairs, and he's obviously interested. You've done enough right to get this kid, you know, excited. And you know what? Yeah, I'd like to play. But
I'm always cautious.
I would be stupid to see him
after someone makes a commitment, a verbal commitment, right after they come for the visit.
Well, exactly.
Because they're going to pull out all the stops LSU did. It's the whining and dining experience. You're still... Right. Have that euphoria of being, you know, oh, I toured Tiger Stadium and I saw the weight room facility and I got to meet some Tigers and got to hang out with Coach, you know, Ed O and the whole nine yards, right? So when those kids then make a decision based right off of a visit, I'm always like, okay, it's not to say that this young man will not stay committed to LSU because they've done a tremendous job in recruiting the last few years, and this 2020 class is shaping up to be just completely nasty. Go247 has the 2020 class for LSU as of right now, this morning, as the number 3 ranked class in the nation, the 2nd in the SEC. But there has been an emphasis placed on the defensive line, which I like if you're an LSU fan, regardless if this young man sticks to his verbal commitment or not.
Right, and that was another thing I was going to mention, is that I do like that a lot of these talks are big guys, big nasties, guys that are going to put their hand in the ground and get work done. That, again, is another exciting thing. They're doing all the right things, LSU recruiting. You know, I have no complaints of what they're doing. It's just, if you're asking me if I'm super pumped because of a commitment, especially just a verbal commitment from an Alabama player, I'm going to hold my excitement off because I've been burned a handful of too many times.
They have 5 commitments now for the 2020 class. Demon Clowney leads the way. He's the 4-star pass rusher.
That's a great name.
That is a tremendous name. Out of Baltimore, he was one of the early commitments for this class. Alec Bryant out of Shadow Creek High School there in Pearland, Texas. He's a 4-star defensive end, pass rusher as well. Eric Taylor, who we just mentioned, who committed. He's a 4-star defensive tackle, 6'4", 280. He's only a senior in high school. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Cameron Jackson out of Hainesville here in the state. He's a 3-star prospect, defensive tackle. He committed back in December. And, of course, Patrick Jenkins, who we talked about earlier this week, the young man out of John Arrett High School. He's a 3-star defensive tackle. And then Jordan Berry out of Harbor City, California, is a 3-star defensive tackle as well. So they're placing an emphasis on defensive line and beefing that up and getting bigger and stronger. So this is a step, once again, in the right direction. We got to wrap up hour number 2.
More sports talk coming up next here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We talked a lot on today's show about the New Orleans Pelicans. What are they going to do in tomorrow night's draft? We expect them to take Zion Williamson, number one overall, the power forward out of Duke, the freshman phenom. But there's a lot of discussion on what they're going to do with their other pick, the number four overall pick that they got in return for Anthony Davis in the trade with the Los Angeles Lakers. Could they move up? Could they move down? Could they swap it for an actual veteran player, maybe someone like Bradley Beal, whatnot? But even though all eyes may be on the New Orleans Pelicans on what they're going to be doing with the draft tomorrow night, it's not the only storylines involving the state of Louisiana with the draft, because there's not one but two players from LSU who are hoping to get that phone call in either the late first round or early second round with Naz Reid and Tremont Waters. We'll talk more about Reed and Waters' draft chances as a man who covers the LSU basketball team better than anyone else. It's the one and only Sheldon Mickles from the Baton Rouge Advocate as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on, Sheldon. Sheldon, good morning to you. How you doing?
Good. How you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. Look, the buzz about, you know, the Pelicans have kind of stolen the thunder, so to speak, when it concerns the NBA draft, and maybe rightfully so, being awarded the number one pick via the lottery and then the trade to get another lottery pick for Anthony Davis. But there's Naz Reid, there's Tremont Waters. I know you wrote a story about it for The Advocate. What can you tell us about the process that both of those young men went through to get ready for the draft, and what kind of it looks like their prospects are for tomorrow night's draft?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that they went to the combine, which was a good sign for them, I don't know much about where they went or their visits. Those kids, they moved out and moved away and never could get in contact with them. So kind of out in the dark on it, you know, and, kind of followed along on the NBA combine and, I don't think Naz Reid did all that well at the combine, but I thought Tremont Waters had some really good numbers. Although I talked to an NBA scout last week who told me, he said, at least my organization does not put a lot of stock into the combine. Probably it's not as intense, not probably, I know it's not as intense as the NFL combine workouts. And when you have so many teams that have so much going for them, what I'm trying to say is the NFL, you have a seven-round draft. You have to do a lot of mining for talent at that NFL draft combine, where you only have 60 players at the NBA draft combine, a little more than 60, I think 66. But it's just probably not as intense as a process it is. So I don't know. I imagine I've seen some, and I've written where, you know, some of these guys took visits to certain places. I can't tell you offhand right now. Just going from the projections, though, I mean, they look like they're in good shape to both get drafted. And And like I said, I talked to this one scout last week, said he would be very surprised if Tremont Waters doesn't get drafted. You know, a lot of people, you know, last year he put his name in, and a lot of people took shots at him, you know, why did you go in? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? And it upset his family. I know that for a fact, because his dad wasn't very happy about it. But, you know, he went out and he checked out the process, and he was told that he needed to work on his body, get bigger and stronger, and he needed to be a more of a leader, and he had to work on his defense. And he came back to school, and he did a lot of that. And, you know, a lot of people now are projecting him to be a second-round pick, late second round. You know, in the second half of the second round, so anywhere from 45 on down to 60. And this particular scout told me that, you know, he said it would surprise me if he didn't, but he said it would if he did get drafted. He said it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't get drafted, because there's only 60 picks, and he says I have like 70 picks guys that I think could get drafted. So he was kind of not wishy-washy, but he was kind of saving. You know, saving himself a little bit there. But, you know, Naz Reid, you know, he came to LSU as a lottery. Everybody was predicting him as a lottery pick. That was a year and a month ago that he got to campus. And, you know, I don't think he disappointed. I mean, you know, a lot of people were expecting the guy, I guess, to put up 25 points and 15 rebounds every game. And I don't think he did. You know, obviously he didn't do that, but I think he did a lot, and especially in his last, I want to say 14 games, I checked out his averages. He was like 14.4 points and 9.2 rebounds a game in his last 14 games, I believe the number was I had. But, I mean, he had some really, really good games down the stretch. I mean, the game in Mississippi State, they don't win it if he doesn't hit the three. He scored 25 of his 29 points after halftime at Starkville. To beat a very good, you know, Mississippi State team on the road. He had, I want to say, 16 points and a lot of rebounds at Florida, and another overtime game that they don't win if he's not there. And then another overtime game at Arkansas, which was outside of that 14-game range, where he took 5 charges. So, you know, in a game that went to overtime. So they don't win that one if he doesn't take 5 charges. But, you know, people question, you know, whether he's, you know, got the desire. I told somebody last week, I thought he was a little bit aloof, you know, at times. He's kind of a quiet kid. You know, on the court, he's pretty aggressive. But, you know, he started dropping to the bottom of the first round, you know, as the season wore on, and now he's up in the top of the second round. So, you know, all it takes is one team. I saw one of the mock drafts. We did a little survey of 10 mock drafts, and one mock draft had him going 26 to the Cavaliers. I guess there's a possibility that could happen, but probably I would think in the early, you know, mid to late 30s would be a spot he could land in. And as far as Tremont, like I said, I thought he had another very good year. He did more. His numbers went down a little bit, but that was to be expected with the talent he had around him, because you're not going to score that much when you got a Reed there, and you got a, you know, you had Javante Smart was taking some of the points. Skylar Mays increased his point production. So, but, you know, for a guy to make all SEC first team and, you know, and was a co-defensive player of the year, and Reed to be an all-America freshman team, you know, by Kyle Macy, I think those are two pretty good players, and I think despite all the international players that come out, all the young players that come out, that push some people down in the draft, I think they're both going to get picked in the second round.
We're talking with Sheldon Mickles of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Sheldon, a couple of the points that you made there, and I want to piggyback off is, you know, I think Naz developed as the season progressed. He very much had to learn how to kind of play in within his body. He seemed clumsy early on, but as the season progressed, he seemed to become more confident, more aggressive, and started to figure out that he was kind of bigger and stronger than most of the guys on the court. That took him a little while to grow into that. And Tremont Waters improved
greatly defensively. He was the co-defensive player of the year in the SEC. I know some of the positives early on in this process were, well, you know, Trevant's defense is going to give him an opportunity, but his height and his turnovers are some of the minuses on him during the draft evaluation process. Naz Reid has a little bit of a slender build, and he needs to be more aggressive and maybe pack on some things. But those seem to be all things, with the exception of Trevant's height. Those seem to be things that they can work on throughout the process, right? You know, Trevant can get better at not turning over the ball as much, and Naz can simply, you know, build up some muscle mass and become more aggressive. You know, I know you weren't following them, you know, closely, but it does seem like they're trending upward heading into the draft, that maybe some of these teams like what they see, as these guys are two players that potentially they can develop into rotational guys.
Yeah, I don't think Naz, I don't think there's any question about his size and his strength. I think they like, you know, I think they like where he's at, you know, and with his size and his strength. I mean, he's a big, thick, you know, guy. I mean, he lost a lot of weight, and I want to, you know, he lost, I want to say 40, 34, 35, 40 pounds or so, you know, when he got here. And, you know, he had his way with the high school kids and, you know, and probably, you know, he did some things that he couldn't get away with in college, and he's going to do some things in the NBA, you know, assuming he gets drafted and makes a roster. He's going to do some things that he's not going to get away with in the NBA that he got away with in college. So it's going to be another step in the process. But one of the things I really like about it is he's got an NBA-ready body. I mean, unless I'm totally wrong here, I think he's big and strong enough. And the one thing the scout told me last week was that he, you know, he's very good at his footwork is very good. He's quick. He could get out. He could pop out and take that three. Now, in the early part of the season, I think he was taking too many threes, and he was taking very deep threes.
Yeah.
He was taking some NBA threes. In the NBA, you're probably going to have people running at you, chasing you off the line, and you know, kind of coming at you. Where he was taking these threes, where nobody, you know, was popping out to go defend him. And I think there's going to be more. You know, there's going to be more speed in the NBA, obviously, and they're going to get out there. So he that might be taken away from him, but I think he just doesn't look like he jumps real high. That was the one thing a lot of people thought about him here. That I don't know if he's, you know, just didn't try hard enough, and that's one of the big knocks on him, that he his motor. And I remember I want to say after the Maryland game over in Jacksonville, Greg Heyer was talking about Naz, and he was saying that, he says, I don't know why people question his desire and his, you know, his motor and all this stuff. And he says, the guy's done everything we've asked him to do. He never wants to come out of practice. He never wants to miss, you know, a minute. You know, he never, you know, he's always in the drills. He's always in this. He's always in that. He's done everything we've asked him to do. Now, it's different in the NBA. I mean, you know, it's going to be a different animal, but, you know, you don't know what – I mean, the NBA is such a – deal where, you know, you got guys that are now doing it for a whole lot of money, and, you know, I'm trying to find a word to where it's just different. I mean, you know, and so he's going to have to probably – turn that up a notch if there is a perception that he does not work hard enough. But, I mean, you know, like I said, Greg Heyer said his work ethic, and Will Wade said this many times, his work ethic has been great. So, you know, he's got the body, he's got the skills, he's got the footwork. He just needs to probably, you know, he's going to have to just jack it up a notch when he gets to the NBA, assuming he does make a team. But, and then as far as Trevant goes, I mean, the thing that the scouts like about him is his ability to, you know, his speed and his ability is, you know, attack. He can attack at times, and he can pull the ball back. He can dish it. You know, he could do, you know, so many things, which is what you want your point guard to do. And I've had another scout I was talking to at the Texas A&M game over at College Station. He said that, you know, his organization does not worry about size so much. I mean, you had guys back in the, I guess that was a different era, obviously, back in the 80s, in the late 80s, that 5'5" that played, you know, Muggsy Bogues and, you know, people like that. So, you know, if you have the talent, you could play in the NBA. And I know that this one guy I talked to last week said that, you know, they would like him to increase his shooting, you know, his shooting percentage. He was only 33% from three-point range, so they would like that to improve. But, you know, he said that they can work with the tools that he has. So, you know, it's not a question of not having the ability. They love his basketball IQ. They love the way he, you know, directs the team, and they love the way he plays defense. That was a bonus. You know, he gets his hands on the ball a lot. He flicks it away. He goes after. You know, he picks people's pocket. You know, so that's another thing that you kind of wonder. You know, that how much is that going to weigh with a lot of teams? You know, some teams more defensive minded than others. So you don't know. Some teams may say, well, we don't draft a guy under 6 feet tall. And I think he measured at a little over 5'9½", somewhere around there at the combine with no shoes on. So, you know, some teams may automatically drop him off their board because, hey, we don't draft anybody under 6 feet. So that may cut down his possibilities, but they definitely like what he brings to the table.
We're on with Sheldon Mickles here of the Baton Rouge Advocate on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Sheldon, one last question before we let you go. Yesterday, LSU locked themselves up a yet another Gatorade Louisiana Player of the Year as Jalen Cook, the young man, the 6 foot, 180-pound guard out of Walker, committed to LSU. He committed to LSU over other offers from the likes of Georgetown, Houston, and Southern Miss. He's ranked nationally in the top 25, and he's considered the number 2 prospect in the state of Louisiana. How big of a get is this for Will Wade and his staff to lock up the reigning Gatorade Louisiana Player of the Year?
Well, they had gotten off to a slow start, you know, and didn't have any you know, commitments as of, you know, yesterday. And I think the way he operates is that he takes his time. You know, he's not one of these guys that's going to go get, you know, a lot of guys early. I mean, obviously, point guard, you hear that, you know, everybody wants to get the bigs, and, you know, you have to get the point guard. You have to have a point guard, and I think Tremont Waters showed that the last two seasons, how efficiently he had some turnovers, obviously, but how he ran that team. I mean, LSU does not win, you know, 46 games the last 2 years or however many they won without Tremont Waters playing at a high level. So you have to have that. And then being a local kid, I think is a big thing. And like you said, he's a third one in recent memory, Wade Sims and Javonte Smart, now Jalen Cook, you know, to be the Louisiana Gatorade Player of the Year to sign with LSU. So, I remember, you know, Will Wade, when he got the job in March of 17, one of the first things he said is we want to get the local kids. And, he's done that the last 2 years now. It seems like he's going after the really, you know, the really elite ones. You know, now I know Jalen Cook is a football player too, so we have to see how that pans out. But it looks like he's more committed, obviously, to basketball. But you know, it shows that he wants to start in Louisiana and then go outside if he has to. But you know, it's a good spot for them to fill. I mean, the guy had a breakout year. Kid had a breakout year with 29.5 points a game, 5 point something rebounds. I mean, yeah, he's a very good all-around player. Robin Fambro would know more about his abilities. I haven't seen him play a lot more, but I think it's a good start for their 2020 recruiting class, and I expect them to, you know, maybe get one or two more, you know, by November, and then they work in the spring to fill in spots wherever they need to.
Well, Sheldon, appreciate you making time for us this morning. Appreciate everything you do, brother, and enjoy the rest of your summer, and we'll talk to you soon.
What summer? It's gone already.
I know, brother. I know. Appreciate you, Sheldon.
It never ends. But anyway, yeah, it was good being here, and I appreciate you having me on, and we'll talk to you later.
Sheldon Mickles, Baton Rouge Advocate, LSU basketball beat writer. Break it down. Naz Reid, Tremont Waters look like they're going to get drafted in the second round.
I love how he started by saying, well, you know, I've been kind of out of the loop. I don't have a lot of info to give you, and then proceeded to pour the info so thick. Like,
just layered.
What are you talking about, Sheldon? Like, yeah, I don't really have much to say on the case. Yeah, 20 minutes later? Okay, Sheldon.
Just next level.
Just you're underselling yourself, Mr. Mickles. You're selling yourself short, sir.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, some changes to the world of golf. We'll dive right in. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. A little golf news for you that concerns us locally. The PGA Tour's developmental tour has a new name. The Corn Ferry Tour.
Corn with a K.
Corn with a K. Corn Ferry Tour. Known for the past 7 years as the Web.com Tour, after previous stints known as the Nationwide Tour, the Buy.com Tour, the Nike Tour, and the Hogan Tour, there's a new sponsor effective immediately. Starting with this week's Wichita Open, which starts Thursday, Corn Ferry, a Los Angeles-based global consulting firm, will take over as the umbrella sponsor with a 10-year deal in place with the PGA Tour running through 2028. Now, Web.com had signed a 10-year deal back in June of 2012, but that deal ended short of that agreement after the company was sold last year, as reported by Sports Business Journal. As part of the agreement, Korn Ferry, with a K, becomes an official marketing partner of the PGA Tour. The Tour Championship and Q School will both be Korn Ferry branded. This is the firm's first sports sponsorship deal. So next year's Louisiana Chittimacha Open, we'll have all types of new signage. It will be brought to you. It will be a Corn Ferry Tour event. Stop.
Yeah, the only thing changing is the brand name.
Correct.
All, so instead of web.com. It's still the developmental PGA Tour. It's all that. It's just a different name.
So instead of web.com, it will be Corn Ferry Tour. So
I like it. The KFT. Hashtag KFT.
We'll have time to adjust to it before next year's Louisiana Open. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast about all things Hoodats right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our third and final guest of today's program. He covers the New Orleans Saints for the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's our good friend, Andrew Juge. Andrew, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the reshuffle, Raymond. I appreciate it. And, yeah, glad to be on. And, yeah, we're getting a little closer to training camp, and we've got a lot of news that's hit to talk about.
That's right, brother. You just thought you were going to be able to take a vacation, sneak it in there after mini camp and training camp. Big news coming out of New Orleans just in the last 2 days, Andrew, and I want to get your thoughts on that. Falling just a week or so behind the Cam Jordan deal, which locked him up through 2023, $42 million guaranteed to the man who's the heart and soul of the defense. Top priority then became, coming out of New Orleans, got to lock up Michael Thomas. Multiple media reports are now stating that they are working on a deal to make the former second-round pick, who's entering his fourth year in the league, all with the Saints, the highest-paid wide receiver in the game, and are going to try to get that deal done by the start of training camp. Are you surprised, Andrew, that they're going to try to get this deal done so soon, and are you surprised that they're going to make him the highest-paid wide receiver in the game?
I'm a little surprised in that I think if you look back to kind of the big-time players, and I don't really think you can equate Michael Thomas and his contract to really anybody but the elite players on the Saints with the elite contracts. And so when you consider how negotiations went with Drew Brees, where it was always up to the 11th hour and highly complicated and maybe a little contentious, and you look at how things went with Jimmy Graham, where it was highly contentious, and you know, Jimmy Graham at the end signed a deal that he felt grossly undervalued his quality and his performance, and a year later they traded him because of the animosity. And you look at how things went with a number of the guys, I think, over the years and contracts. I'm just surprised to see that they would get Michael Thomas done before they need to, because he's under contract, and they could push this another year and milk as much as they could out of him. And usually that's been Mickey Loomis's MO, unless the player is willing to take a deal that's, you know, less than market value on Mickey Loomis's terms. So for Mickey Loomis to get a deal done ahead of time that's favorable to the player is a little bit surprising to me. Now, when you use the term highest paid receiver in the NFL, I feel like that's kind of a loose thing, because listen, that changes week to week, and that'll only be the case until Julio Jones's deal hits, which is imminent, which will unquestionably be higher than Michael Thomas's. And you know, over the years, you look at Jari Evans, Jairus Byrd, Will Lutz, they were all the highest paid players at their positions at one time. So, Michael Thomas will get a great contract that for now, I mean, the salary cap keeps going up. So being the highest paid player makes sense. If the next guy that gets a contract is going to be the highest paid, that won't last long. But he's in the mix of those top five receivers in the NFL, and he certainly deserves it.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, you hinted at it right there in your comments. Usually, this is not typically how the Saints do business. There have been negotiations between them and Brees before that have gotten a little contentious. Reports have over the years. We know how the situation with Jimmy Graham ended up. Why the change of heart here? Why the change in philosophy? Is this how the franchise is going to be doing business moving forward, or is it more to do with, hey, we need to make sure to lock down these guys, these foundational pieces guys, and have them in place and have those contracts done before Drew Brees retires and we have to deal with that dead money that's going to affect the cap in years to come?
Well, I think it's a little different with both players. I think with Cam Jordan, the Saints got a favorable deal. I think Cam Jordan made it clear. Now, he got paid, don't get me wrong. I mean, he still got a massive deal. But when you look at Khalil Mack and you look at the other elite pass rushers out there, Cam Jordan got a lot less than those guys. And so I think Cam Jordan said, hey, I want to be a Saint for the rest of my career. I want to get paid nicely, but I'm not all about breaking records and trying to further advance the NFLPA's agenda and have an agent that's just going to milk every penny I can get. So I think those negotiations happened quickly and easily because Cam Jordan was pretty reasonable. I think there would have been an opportunity for Jordan to be a lot more demanding in his asking price. And I think it could have made things a lot more difficult. But he kind of chose to say, hey, if you pay me handsomely and we're in the ballpark, I want to sign because I want to be a Saint forever, and I don't care about the extra million here, the extra million there. I'm not going to sweat that. And I think that's a big reason why that deal got done differently, or got done so quickly. With Michael Thomas, I view it differently. And going back to your original question, I think it's the latter. I don't think it's one of those things where they're operating differently. I think they're making an exception for Michael Thomas, and I see this for two reasons. The first one is, when you look at Michael Thomas and his work ethic, it's second to none. He's very much a first guy in, last guy out type of guy. You talk about the hand yoga. You talk about all these things that make Michael Thomas who he is, an exceptionally hard worker. As much as he wants the money, I think there is a deeper motivation to Michael Thomas wanting to be the best, wanting to win a Super Bowl. There are motivations outside of money. He loves the game of football, and I think the Saints are betting on that because they see a rare breed. They see a guy like Drew Brees and Michael Thomas that just has that hunger to keep working. And so when you look at his work ethic, I think the Saints believe, you know, talent's only going to get you so far. And it's great if you have talent, but I just think at the end of the day, the Saints feel like, hey, this is a pretty safe bet because this isn't one of these guys that's going to get paid and get fat and happy and the performance is going to drop. So I think that's the first reason. The second reason is when you look at Michael Thomas, he's really kind of a bridge to the end of the Breeze era and the post-Breeze era. When you look at Drew Breeze, and we don't know how much time we have left with Breeze. This could be his last year. Maybe it's a few years. And right now, the assumption is that the heir apparent is Teddy Bridgewater. And we don't know that for sure. But at this point, things seem to be going that way. Now, when you look at the end of Drew Breeze's career, the best way for him to go out and age gracefully and end with success is to pair him with a superstar talent like Michael Thomas that will help him maximize whatever he has left. But once Drew Brees leaves, and you think about the enormity of what's in store for the quarterback that's the heir apparent, whether that's Teddy Bridgewater or someone else, and what they're going to have to do, what the situation that they're going to have to succeeding a guy like Drew Brees, there is no way you can put that kind of pressure on a quarterback without having Michael Thomas in the mix to help them. So I just think he's a bridge to the pre-Brees era or the pre-end of Brees and the post-end of Brees. And I just think the Saints need him around for both of those situations.
Talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Half Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, so they got Cam locked up, leader of the defense. They got Michael Thomas, their best offensive playmaker, locked up as well. They got all the pieces in place. They don't have to get a deal done for Kamara this year. They still have another extra year to work on that because of where he was drafted and the length of his contract. Same thing for Marshawn Lattimore as well. He's even further behind because he was a first-round pick. Do you expect, with Cam being locked up and now Michael Thomas being locked up, do we expect the Saints to make any other moves maybe with Kamara or Marshawn Lattimore in the next year during the season, or do you think they're just going to table that and see what happens this season and what happens with Drew Brees?
I think they table it. So I don't think that's imminent with those two players. It's interesting. I was talking, I'm on the Saints Happy Hour podcast, and I was talking about this with my co-host, Ralph Malbro. And if you check us out, we actually have a show kind of dedicated to this. But the comments that I made, which I'll share here, is that I see the Lattimore contract down the road is pretty simple. Now, it's going to be insanely expensive because we see the kind of money that corners are getting in free agency. And so the Saints will have a decision to make, obviously, if they want to keep him or not a few years down the road. But I see that contract as pretty simple because corners make huge money. Lattimore's going to want top flight corner money. It's going to be very expensive, but I think the dollars and cents of it will be pretty simple. And I think Loomis will either have to decide, yes, we're going to pay him the big ticket corner money or we're going to let him walk. But that's a discussion for a different day. I view the Kamara contract situation, once it comes, and I don't think that's in the next year, I view that as way more complicated. And the reason I say that is Kamara has a value to this team that goes way beyond statistics. If you look at how Mark Ingram and how this offseason went for him, and the Saints kind of lowballing him at $4.5 million a year, he ends up going to Baltimore for $5 million a year. That's kind of the going rate. Running backs don't get a lot of money. And if you look at Kamara's statistics, where he's not, unlike Ingram, he's not a guy that's running for 1,000 yards a season. So, he puts up some stats in the passing game, but he doesn't really have the statistics like a Le'Veon Bell, like a Ezekiel Elliott to command top flight running back money. Now, if you talk about his value, what he forces defenses to do from a schematic point of view, what he opens up for other players simply by being on the field and the big playability that he has. I mean, we all know how valuable Alvin Kamara is. And I believe if a guy like Kamara hits the open market as a free agent, someone would overpay for him because they know how special of a talent he is. And I could see a team like Kansas City who just lost Kareem Hunt and maybe losing Tyreek Hill. I could see a team like that saying, I will pay $13 million a year, even though the going rate statistically for that guy is maybe $5 million a year, $6 million a year. I'm putting double down on that because I think he's that good. And I think that's going to be a difficult thing to navigate for Mickey Loomis. I think that is a lot more complicated of a situation, and fortunately, they don't have to do it quite yet, but I know I have a feeling that's something the Saints are not going to be looking forward to.
Wrong with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. And you're exactly correct, Andrew, because Kamara does not fit the typical running back money, right? This could be very much a Le'Veon Bell situation where it's like, hey, I am extremely valuable in other, you know, other aspects of our offense. I'm just not a running back. And we know, we've talked about it on this show before, we say Michael Thomas is the number one option in the passing game, Kamara is number two. And then, you know, they bring in Jared Cook as the tight end. So because of how they use Alvin Kamara, those negotiations are going to be a little difficult, I believe, with the Saints moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. But, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is in the game every snap. And, you know, he's a guy that kind of had the statistics. So in some ways, I almost feel like it's even more complicated. Now, we'll see. I mean, Alvin Kamara may be a reasonable guy. But, you know, we don't know 2 years from now what his agent will want, what he will want, if he wants to stay with the Saints, if he wants to get the most money possible. You know, the Saints offense is not really set up to give you volume carries and volume catches. And so that's one of those things where, you know, I think he's maximized the statistics to some degree, but I think if he was on the field every play for a team like Pittsburgh or a team like Kansas City, you would see Alvin Kamara rushing for 1,300 yards and catching for 1,000 yards potentially. So I think he certainly has that capability. I think he may have a chance to have a longer career with the Saints because they will go dial back the mileage a little bit, but that affects his contract value. So difficult situation to navigate, but fortunately they don't have to worry about that quite yet.
Andrew, appreciate you coming on, as always, making time for us. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon for training camp.
That sounds good. Thank you.
That's Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast joining us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, breaking down the Michael Thomas contract talks. He makes some good points there about Kamara, because that's going to be Cam Jordan's easier. Michael Thomas, easier.
Well, more.
Kamara is going to be difficult.
By easier, I think we mean fits more inside the lines.
Right, the traditional contract negotiations,
you're
right?
You're coloring inside the lines with those contracts.
Alvin
Kamara, not at all.
Not
which
at
is,
all.
Which is such an Alvin Kamara thing on top of all that. It's like, my contract's not going to be just straight up, and that's going to be very confusing.
And he's a fan favorite, and he's a two-time Pro Bowler in his first 2 years. And you're going to see his load even increase this year. He's probably going to be more prominent in the offense and scoring. If you're the Saints, you're going to have to pay Alvin unless you want to play hardball and be like, look, man, we can get another guy in the fourth round. I think Kamara's special.
He just
fell to the fourth round. Remember, Kamara began his career at Alabama. There was such a logjam at running back, he couldn't get any playing time and then transferred.
Right.
And, you know, ended up at Tennessee. And they weren't very good. That wasn't his fault. So the Saints got a steal there by Kamara falling all the way to them. But I don't know, man. That's going to be – it's great right now. If they lock up Thomas, perfect. And you think about this season. But is Alvin Kamara going to be part of the future? Because they're going to have to pay him, man. They're going to have to pay him.
This situation reads to me a lot like Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. The Steelers botched that completely. Blew it over the course of multiple seasons. Blew it. The Saints, learn from those guys and do better.
Yes, please do better.
And also, Andrew on vacation, still coming on the show. If I'm on vacation, Ray, don't call me.
If it's a Saturday afternoon, I'll call you.
I mean, I might answer on a Saturday. Depends on what's going on a Saturday afternoon.
I'm just giving you hell, dude. Terrific stuff. We got to hit a break, but when we come back, we'll close out shop here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1.
as well as 133 and 1133 in HD and OUS fiber. Just a programming reminder, day baseball right here on 103.7 The Game. Astro launch will be live right here at 11 o'clock. First pitch at 11:35 for Houston Astros at Cincinnati Reds. That's the third game of a three-game series on the road. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game. Cody Schuetz.
Yeah.
You got something to say.
I do. I know you have your thank yous and all that. I will let you get to them, but I can't go through this entire show without talking a little soccer. I want to just mention...
Is it women's national
team?
No,
it is not. It is not.
Oh, so it's going to be the bad soccer.
It is the bad... Yeah, it's the not-as-fun soccer. The U.S. men's national team, they opened up play in the Gold Cup yesterday. They were taking on Guyana. The Gold Cup is going to be USA's probably their best chance at qualifying for the World Cup, which is coming up in a couple years here. United States getting the 4-0 win, so that's always good. You know, no complaints here. Getting a nice 4-0 win, but... Just one play from that game will explain U.S. men's soccer to you. Guy takes a shot from right outside the box. A defender for Guyana heads it out to clear it away from the goal. And another USA player, who's not paying attention at all, gets smoked in the face with the ball. And the ball ricochets off of his face and into the back of the net. USA scores a goal. The guy was like grabbing his face, trying to rub it to make it stop hurting when he realized the ball had gone into the back of the net. So you've got the U.S. women's team scoring 13 goals on teams and three and just toying with countries, while the U.S. men's team needs to have the ball bounce off their face to get into the back of the goal. So just a short take there on the difference between men and women's soccer in the United States.
Yes, one is a well-oiled machine that has great development through youth in college and is able to farm into the U.S. women's national program. And the other one... There we go. USA.
Hey, keep trying. I'm going to keep watching. They got to keep trying. I'm going to keep watching.
I love your love for soccer. Love it. Passionate. I want to thank our guest, Danny Broussard, STM, Sheldon Mickles from the Veterans Advocate, and Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We'll be back on tomorrow with another jam-packed edition previewing the NBA draft. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.